Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Good night, Sherry.
Good night. Buonanotte.
Buonanotte. Yes. Sherry's joining us again live from Italy. It's great to have you.
2 a.m.
2 a.m. Live willingness, huh?
Well, yes, it's very fun though. I mentioned last week that it feels like one of those meditating through the night adventures.
Uh-huh.
And I think, as a matter of fact, is the moon full tonight?
Is the moon full?
So if it's not full, it's very bright out there. So it's quite special.
Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. Is it quiet there in the night?
It is. Oh, it's very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I got some statistics. I don't know if they're accurate. When I looked up for somebody, I looked up the population of Assisi, and I think they said there were 25,000 people. And then somebody here told me that the last time they checked there were 15,000, and then currently it's an estimate of 600 people who live here full-time as residents. 600 people. and it's winter, so there are not a lot of tourists. It is extremely quiet here.
Yes.
It's walk around, I'll often be walking around town in the evenings and never see a soul. Many, many cats, but not cat souls, but not human souls. So,
it's
very, very nice, very quiet, very beautiful, extremely beautiful. Everyone must come.
Sounds great. Sounds great. I'd love to join.
And I really, having been here at many different times this year, if people don't mind the cold, it is a wonderful thing to be here. It's wonderful to be here when the town is full of pilgrims. That's a great deal of fun too, because the people who tend to come to Assisi are here. Because of Francis and Claire, and so they're here because of a spiritual calling, and so it's not like going to a theme park, or it's not like going to a popular beach in at vacation time, but it is full of people, just thousands and thousands of people, and to be in these places alone, I spend actually a fair amount of time up at the monastery, which is, three kilometers or so above the town.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always the only person there.
Wow.
And it's a very meditative, retreat-ish kind of proposition.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Very nice.
Sounds very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to join our conversation today, please feel free to give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. And if you want to email us, you can send your questions to openair@kzsu.org. And Sherry, they've been sending us email questions in droves.
Grand.
Yes. And actually, we have someone on the line as well. Ready to talk to them.
Let's get started, then.
Let's get started. I'd like to welcome Bobby from Sacramento. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber. Bobby, are you there?
Oh, dear.
Can you hear us, Bobby?
Bobby is communicating via a series of high-pitched hums.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess we'll have to tune into that channel. Let me try it here. Let's see. Bobby, can you hear us now? He's not there. All right, we're going to have to try again with Bobby, and we'll get back to Bobby in a moment as we look at our technical issues here. And I think now would be a good time to go to our email questions.
Excellent.
Until we get our phone situation worked out here. Hi, Sherry. My behavior around work has been a pattern of three things. One, choosing a job that doesn't really reflect my interests or me, but which conditioning says, I am almost good enough to do. Two, then plugging away at the job for years while having fleeting thoughts about doing something else, but being bullied and shouted out of trying by conditioning. Three, then when the suffering gets unbearable, quitting and taking another similarly unsatisfying job that conditioning says I am, quote, fit to do. This time things have been different until now. I've spent over a year watching conditioning related to work and fun, and about a month ago made an easy, untormented decision from a heart-centered place to leave my job in 3 months and do something I would really love to do. However, I wasn't ready for the ferociousness of conditioning's attack. I've been waking up most nights panicked, heart pounding, and am beginning to feel that I may bend to conditioning's pressure and back out. Perhaps it is conditioning using my awareness practice against me, but someone is saying that it is being, not doing, that is important, and that my current paralysis in the face of this redoubled abuse from conditioning means I'm not ready. I know that what is really important is seeing and being free of this pattern and ending the suffering around it, but part of me really wants to do it this time and follow through with a choice made from the heart. This part says, if not now, when? What are your thoughts on this, Sherry?
Well, my first thought is that this is an outrageously courageous person.
Yes.
Yeah. That's number one. And as you were reading, it was I was struck by what a wonderful thing it is to have that level of self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the most enormous amount of work that has gone into being able to see the process so clearly, and so for me, those are the two most important pieces. that's much more important than kind of the what shall I do question, because this person cannot lose. This person is facing enlightenment regardless of employment.
Yes.
And then, of course, my heart just, for that awful feeling of waking up in the middle of the night in that that kind of panicked grip that conditioning can get over us when we're innocently sleeping along, and then it wakes us up into the agony of that sort of panic. It's just heartbreaking. So for me, it truly doesn't matter what this person does or doesn't do. The enlightenment is simply going to continue to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
Because can you say, is this a male person or a female person?
I believe it's a woman.
Okay, so if she decides not to go forward, if she says, okay, I'm just going to stay in this current job, and because it's too painful. Clearly, I wouldn't be this hysterically panicked if in the middle of the night, because I don't hear the person, I don't hear her being that way during waking hours, then surely this is a sign that I'm not ready. Now, of course, I don't believe that for a second. I think it's absolutely all of this is happening because she is so ready.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really matter. She makes that decision and says, it's just not time. It's not worth it. I can't, I'm going to die of sleep deprivation here or anxiety attack or something. And she says, I'm not going to quit my job. I'm just going to stay where I am. Well, great. It's not going to work, right? Because the next thing that's going to happen is conditioning is going to come in and say, you coward.
Yes.
You know, you're never going to follow your heart. You're always going to cave in. Why did you give in? That was the right. And then she sees that.
Yes.
If she decides to stick with it, then conditioning is going to, at least in my experience, continue to hit her with the worst that it's got for as long as it can. And at a certain point, it just loses its ability to affect her. Mm-hmm. Because after you've been told how many times, it really becomes a process of desensitization. You know, it's just like, okay, I'm going to die. Right, I know. You've told me 100,000 times, and I'm still breathing, and maybe you're wrong. And, you know, it just, our relationship with it changes over time. So, as I say, you know, she's really kind of home free in the seeing department.
Yes.
And once we recognize all of this for what it is, it's not that it's not painful. It's not that waking up in the middle of the night on the edge of a panic attack isn't a miserable life experience to have. But it's very different when we can say, oh, that again, rather than, oh, my gosh, what is this? This must mean that, you know, that kind of believing that it really has something to tell us, and that this is prophecy, not conditioning, and maybe this is coming from a real, true place, and I really am going, you know, when we cross that line and say, that's conditioning, and it's painful, and it's horrible, and miserable, and no, it's not the voice of God, and no, it is not giving me good guidance for how I should live the rest of my life. It's fighting for its life, and it's pulling out all the stops, and it's being just as hideous and ugly as it can be in an attempt to regain control over my life, and that's what it is. And there is nothing for me to do but breathe through it. And so I, from a spiritual perspective, this is about as good as it gets.
Yes.
Until, you know, we cross over that next line where we truly are able to let it go.
Yes.
You know, it just, that particular piece of conditioning has no more ability to affect us, and we don't even believe it or take it seriously, or it can't work us up into a panic over that particular piece of content. Of course, that's the, not that we're doing this to get anywhere, of course,
yes,
we certainly are not, but that's where we're trying to get to,
yes,
you know, or not getting anywhere.
Yes.
And so I just, you know, my only response to it is, congratulations, this is like going through a huge curriculum and getting to the final exam.
Yes.
And,
yes.
It's wonderful.
Yes. And at it,
which is where people write me off as a lunatic. You know, here is a person in a complete state of panic, and I'm saying, this is wonderful. Congratulations. You know, you've just pretty much arrived. And it's like, how can that be?
Yes.
But I'll bet the person who wrote that knows exactly, and probably many, many people, probably everybody listening knows that experience from somewhere in her or his life.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're pointing at that willingness that she's bringing to this.
Oh, tremendous, tremendous willingness to look closely over a period of time.
Yes.
Because this didn't just start last week.
Yes.
This has been going on for years.
Yes.
And we, you know, conditioning would say, well, yeah, look at all the years you've wasted. Because you could have looked at this 15 years ago and been in a job that you love. But those of us who have been looking at this for a while know that that's simply not true, because that karma, that conditioning towards separation and suffering is going to be using anything in our lives. So she gets the job of her dreams, and do we honestly think that conditioning is going to say, okay, you win, I give up, I'm not going to say anything to you anymore because you've really finally made the right decision for your life. It's just going to pick something else.
Yeah.
In fact, it'll probably start a campaign of, oh, you thought this was going to be a great job, but it's not. Look, there's that and that and that that isn't right, and these people, and you're not making enough money, or you're making too much money, and you should, you know.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Whatever tack it's going to take next.
Yes. The other sense I had when you were talking at the beginning is that she can't really make a mistake. There's no, whatever she does, as you said, she stays in the job, she doesn't stay in the job. She's seeing all of that.
Yes, it's all greater illumination. Mm-hmm. Because all that's being revealed in it is conditioning. We're having one of two life experiences all the time. And if somebody was asking me recently, and I realize I don't spend enough time talking about this, I can make it sound like you're either out there in conditioning and karma, or you're here at center. You know, it's very black and white. You're either illuminated and blissful, or you're plunged into darkness and despair. And of course, it's not like that. I can be in degrees of center.
Mm-hmm.
I can be in degrees of yes, I'm awake and I know what's going on, or I'm out there in conditioning. And of course, we do know that there are times when all the lights are on, and there are times when it would appear that all of the lights are off. But most of the time, we're somewhere in between. And what we're doing in our awareness practice is becoming increasingly aware of all of the ways and means that conditioning has of creating suffering in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this woman is describing, is a long period of time watching conditioning use her work life, attempting to make it a source of suffering for her.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and she's seeing it. It's great. It's great. We forget that we bring awareness to our lives so that we can see these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy. As soon as we see them, conditioning says, see, this is what's wrong with you. I told you there was something wrong with you, and this is it.
Yes.
And, of course, it's not. I'm seeing it. Yes. Whenever I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm in the grip of that anxiety, it is my best opportunity to embrace compassion, the one who is the recipient of that kind of hateful program.
Yes.
It's my best opportunity to see conditioning up close and personal at work, attempting to do what it does to inflict that suffering. It's a workshop.
Yes. Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sherry, shall we test the wonders of modern technology once again?
Yeah, see if we can find Bobby.
All right. I'd like to welcome Bobby from Sacramento. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Sherry.
Hi.
Good evening. Good to hear a real human voice.
Well, you know, Sherry, we've known each other for a while.
Yes.
Years, huh?
Yes.
And
many at this point, I would say.
Yeah, I've stepped into the batter's box a few times in my life, and I figured, well, this might be the third strike. And I enjoyed listening to. This is where I get the Dharma, you know, this show.
Mm-hmm.
So this is good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For me, there's a little temple down the road that I go to sometimes. There's a priest there that I like listening to too, but. So this is good, but I want to plug the Peace Center a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I've been plugging the Peace Center over at this little Francis House thing that I work at it in Sacramento as kind of a volunteer. So there's a connect here for you. And it's a, you know, to help with people that have in need of resources and what have you. And so that there's some people there aware of the Peace Center. And there was actually a sister that I know that was there about the same time that you were there last year. And I mentioned her to you. And so there was some synchronicity that went on with your visit there last year, because she was visiting about the same time, and she mentioned something about some sort of ecumenical center, and so you guys were on the same channel.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Well, it's a funny thing. I can't remember if I've mentioned it with people on this show, but very often when I mention the Peace Center, the response, in fact, to me, a shockingly high percentage of the time, people will say, well, that's already being done, which I find extremely humorous, because it's like if we had a Peace Center about every 15 feet around the world, that would seem like about the right percentage of interest and focus for us. It's great. Every time I hear that somebody is here doing some kind of ecumenical interfaith dialogue kind of work, it's just, my heart just goes, yes! Because one of the things that I'm finding, and sounds like she's a part of this, is that this little city, this little tiny city, as I mentioned earlier, is just a mecca for people from all over the world who are in ongoing conversation. It's the connections that I've made here, and not that I personally have made all of these, but talking to different people, and this one is on their way to there to meet with this group, or this one goes to so-and-so to study with or talk with or meet with, just people of every tradition all over the planet, and it's a glorious thing.
Well, I've been there. We have a grant writer here over here who is very, very brilliant, and kind of just an interesting story her whole life, but she's in touch with some of, the Gates, Melissa, and my wife went to school with her over at in Dallas, some of that Big D money. So, I'm one of these good old boys. You know what I'm saying? I'm a visionary. I'm out there, and so whatever happens, happens. You know how that is. And I worked around, these guys at the legislature too long. I still am detoxing from that. It's there's too many identities lost in that. I mean, so mm-hmm. I'm with you on this Peace Center today.
Well, good. And I really appreciate it. I was talking with a woman who was visiting from Vienna for a couple of days, helping with the center, and she's very involved with the United Nations and connected, in that same kind of way that you're talking about. This person knows this person who knows this person. And I was saying to her that it feels like that's kind of where we are right now. Is,
I love you. That's just wonderful.
Building the interest.
Yes. I have a son who's got, he's a corpsman, okay? He's he's so connected. I mean, he's silent just by nature. Well, you know what that
mm-hmm.
is. You know how that is.
Mm-hmm.
He's got this mouthy father who has to sit on his hands to sit, Okay, you got it. You know me, Sherry. and this kid is dialed in,
Uh-huh.
But he's there. He played baseball and was there, and he will go do this. But I have this fear that comes up around this, because we know what this business is all about ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, out of my class, Dad, all but seven of us are going to Iraq, and they ask for five volunteers. Okay. Mm-hmm. He says, how many of us are raising our hand? And I don't want to turn this into politics, because this is a show, but it's about peace. And,
mm-hmm.
and there's a place in all of our hearts that we know all this is about. Mm-hmm. No, it's about the breath we breathe.
Yeah.
It's to be that simple. Yeah. I've heard you say that many times. I wake up some morning, and if I'm in conscious awareness, I go, okay, which identity am I going to pluck out of the air today?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Which form?
And can I stay conscious as I go through the day, and can I stay with the breath? I'm looking at that constantly being here, looking at practice, at conscious, compassionate awareness from the perspective of peace, because that's, of course, where my life is focused right now. So what does that mean, and what does that mean for someone who is in a path right now of military service and at a time of war and...
I looked at kind of
a lot to look at.
A nobleness.
And so how do I, as I get up in the morning, how do I look at the tendencies of my life to go in karmically directed ways? How do I come back from that? How do I, in our lingo, how do I get out of the content of life so that I can get into the process of life, realizing that for every one of us, all that we have is the amount of breath in our lungs at this moment. It's easy for us to forget that we don't have just endless amounts of time, because when we're going along in our lives, it can feel endless. You know, I've always been alive. You know that feeling?
Oh, yeah. And it gets down to that thing, this bag of bones and body. There was this point when you were talking with this lady about depression last week, and it was wonderful. I was watching you, or not watching you, but watching you in my mind's eye and listening, how you were helping, and this kindness that you've always had, and this transformation, seeing somebody's being made well or better, or two people, or everybody listening is being made better by the whole dialogue, actually. Everybody's being affected. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the whole universe, really. You know,
we do not know, do we?
It's being transformed by that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the energy of that is transforming just everything, believe it or not. I mean, see, I happen to believe that. Now, I don't care whether people believe that or not, but personally, I believe that energy transforms everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And so with your looking at this issue, say with your son, or the woman that we were talking about before, with the anxiety of the job and what should I do, it could be easy for us to be pulled into a fear place or a something wrong place,
mm-hmm.
and then the conscious effort to bring ourselves back to the present and remember that what we have is the opportunity to come to a place of that is unconditional, where we're attempting to open our hearts, where we're attempting to find a place of peace that embraces us and embraces all, and that's the constant work, regardless of our life circumstances.
That was one of the big magnets that attracted me to this practice the first time I saw you over in Davis. It was so amazing. There was that bear there from some newspaper, it may have been the Sacramento Bee or something, armed to the hilt, ready to take you on, like, what's his name, Hemingway. And by the time you were finished, in loving compassion, this guy was ready to buy all your books, which may have been all of seven at that time, or whatever, and he was on the path to waking up, and I said, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
So there's your son.
Transformation right there, just, and not a shot was fired.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm thinking about your son and his path here, and who knows what kind of conscious awareness, what kind of healing energy he's going to bring with him, even into circumstances that many of us would desperately wish did not exist.
Right, and at least the one blessing of that is he is there to make others well.
Yes.
If that
to offer
sense.
Healing.
Yeah.
In times of great wounding.
Right. And yeah. You know, I don't know what happened to George, but I wished I wished he would get a different agenda. I tried to write to him about Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther. I got the automated response.
Well, that's, you know, Bobby, that's one of the things that I like best about this practice, is that we can get into those places of looking at what somebody else is doing, and we do, let's face it, we do, and then we're always called to come back, bring it back here, and say, and how am I doing that in my life?
It transforms
and
you.
How might I turn that around in my life? So in the same way that you were talking about a little bit ago, we might make that little change, that little transformation in the hearts and minds of all, and maybe move a little more in the direction that we think is a good direction to be moving in.
Right.
So we'll be thinking about you and sending the best of that energy to your son, and as he makes his way or doesn't make his way in the direction of that that great wounding that's going on in that particular part of the world.
Sherry, one thing. It that energy, when you do that, I kept rewriting and rewriting and rewriting and rewriting the letter. And when I do that, mm-hmm. you know what the transformation takes place is within us. That's
yes.
what I started watching. I said,
yeah.
It's not even about them.
Yeah.
It's about,
yeah.
It becomes like the meditation, the practice itself. It transforms
uh-huh.
us.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's not even
so,
about.
That's a wonderful exercise, isn't it? I start out writing this letter, and maybe it's a letter with a lot of heat behind it.
Right.
And maybe a fair amount of something wrong mind that it's coming from.
Right, it burns my off.
And the something wrong is you. And then I write that letter, and I sit with that for a while, and then I think, you know, that's not exactly the point I wanted to make or the energy that I want to put out there. And so I rewrite it, and I rewrite it, and I rewrite it, and every time I'm seeing more, I'm seeing something new, I can feel my heart opening, I can feel my mind opening, and by the time I get finished, I just have to write a quick, thanks, George, I needed that. and I don't actually have to send any of it, because all of the letters were actually written to me for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So then we just pray for the awakening of us all and go on with our lives.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's great talking with you, Bobby. Take
Thanks,
good care
Sherry.
Of yourself.
Yes.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Bobby. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Stay tuned to KZSU. At 6 p.m. we have the news until 6:15 p.m. Then DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian, some more wonderful world music. And then from 8 to 10 p.m. we have Mike with The Baptism of Solitude. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 650-723-9010. We'd love to talk with you, and we'll be back after this break. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sherry, I found it really helpful when you keep reminding us to bring it back to ourselves.
Uh-huh.
As Bobby was talking about.
It's so counter to our conditioning, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, I mean, truly, if we want to think about what kind of brainwashing system conditioning is, that's such a perfect example. That everything directs us out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what they are doing. What is your opinion about them? Mm-hmm. It seems to me, anyway, when I look around, that's the focus of our training, and that's what we're supported in doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not here's an article in the newspaper about what somebody is doing. Now, what happens to you when you read that?
Mm-hmm.
That's just not the direction.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. But it does seem to be the one that's most helpful, huh?
Yes, absolutely. Sherry, I have some more email questions here.
Very good.
I own and read all of Sherry's books and have found them more helpful than anything else I've found. After 20 years of marriage and 2 kids, my wife informed me she didn't want anything to do with me anymore, but did not seek a divorce since she does not want to be the, quote, bad guy in our children's or her family's eyes. We both had focused our energies on raising our kids and not on our relationship or ourselves. My life has gotten better and better as I've tried to stay centered in the moment, have compassion, pay attention, and believe nothing. Recently, I feel like I've made some significant progress in not taking things personally, too. After listening to the January 6th radio show, there was discussion about action. If you found yourself in a bad relationship with your spouse, but had good relationships with your children, but knew that you'd someday have to split with that spouse, but at the same time wanted to do what's best for your children, what would you do? When I stay in the moment, I feel okay. Without worrying about taking action, quote, getting rid of, my life has steadily improved as I've become more aware of lots of the different things going on. But the egocentric conditioning keeps telling me that I am not getting any younger and need to move on. How does one know when to take action and when not to take action? Thank you.
Well, now that is the question, isn't it?
Yes.
Who of us? In fact, somebody said to me today, we were walking back down the hill from the monastery, and the trash along the road was just horrific.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went on a little program, found plastic bags, and went on a little program of trash gathering. And, you know, it's overwhelming. We had, you know, dump trucks. We couldn't have kept up with this. And so once we got started with it, stopping was really hard. And the comment was a quote of Peace Pilgrim who said, always do your share, but don't do more than your share.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, yeah, but there we are. How do you know what is your share? How do you know when it's, you know, where is that line? And what do we listen to? What are we listening to here?
Yes.
By the time we figure out what that is, have we moved on? Have we already done more than our share? Have we waited too long to make it? You know,
yes.
So that's just such a huge piece of spiritual practice and awareness practice. And I'm not saying that in any way like it matters.
Yes.
Because it doesn't. It doesn't. In my world, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's the looking that matters and the realizing that we'll never know, at least in my experience. It's one of those, in a dualistic world, mistakes are the constant.
Yes.
If you can make a mistake, you will. You are.
Yes.
Okay? But if we step out of that reality, then we can simply say there is no such thing. So in a non-dualistic world, of course, in a non-dualistic world, we could also say everything is a mistake. We could say nothing is a mistake. But it's that dualism of this is a mistake, that's not a mistake. Oh, my gosh, was that a mistake? Well, I probably should have, maybe if I, that's the killer. So to get to that place of realizing it doesn't matter what I do, the only thing that matters is the attitude of mind with which I approach whatever it is that happens,
mm-hmm. at
which to me comes down to the amount of compassion that I have for myself, which is going to extend then to everyone and everything else, the amount of compassion that I have in each moment. So if somebody says, well, that you blew that, then, well, what it's like looking at the news again. I read that article. Well, what happened to me as I read that article? What were my beliefs? What were my judgments? How did I close my heart? How did I open my heart? What was I supportive of? What do I think is a good idea? It's all an opportunity to see how I'm conditioned to withhold loving kindness, or how I'm able to open my heart and extend loving kindness. To me, that's what we're coming down to all the time. So if I think I can make a mistake and stay in a relationship too long or leave a relationship too soon, then that's what's going to happen.
Yes.
Because whatever I do, conditioning is going to grab that up back to the woman in her job again. Conditioning is going to grab that up and say, oh, you stayed too long. Oh, you left too soon. Oh, you did this. Oh, you did that. But if it's simply a moment in life in which to open my heart, let go of that conditioned belief system, and extend loving kindness to the person who's trying to make their way through life, then nothing can go wrong. And it sounds like this person is having, again, such a profound workshop in staying in these life circumstances that I suspect that if he goes along, continues in this way, one day it will just be clear that he did or did not stay or leave. I remember working with somebody years ago. In fact, this is written in, heaven only knows what book, but it is. This woman came to me with essentially the same question. You know, I'm in this relationship. It's a perfectly fine relationship. It's not, you know, it doesn't, you know, nobody's going to make the movie, the romantic comedy out of this relationship. But it's perfectly fine. I don't know whether to stay. I don't know whether to leave. And I said, well, then use it as a workshop. You know, let this be the thing that helps you to focus on yourself, on your practice, on opening your heart, on accepting what is, on embracing another human being. It's great. You have these life circumstances that enable you to practice all of the things that you want to practice. And one day, if it becomes obvious to you that you want to go somewhere else or do something else, you'll know that. And you'll know it from a place that isn't angst-filled, that isn't fearful, that isn't resentful. It won't be. It'll just simply be the next step. It'll be about as emotionally charged as going to the grocery store. And years later, in fact, that is exactly what happened. And they both reached the place where they knew that they wanted their lives to move in different directions. Their lives moved in different directions, and they are fabulous friends.
Wow.
Yeah, extremely loving and supporting of one another. And it's not actually the fun part of it, or one of the interesting aspects to me is that during this time, they weren't both working on the relationship. She was working on the relationship and herself in the relationship. He was just going along living his life. And what happened in the relationship is that she just, as she dropped her, you know, looking out there for what's wrong, wanting him to be different, thinking that she was going to miss something in her life if she stayed with him, she just became so kind and loving in the relationship that they could have actually stayed together for the rest of their lives, or, as happened, their lives just very, very kindly and lovingly went in different directions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that, once again, we can, as long as we're stuck in that place of something's wrong, I'm going to make a mistake, I'm missing something, there's a better life for me somewhere else, I could be having a better life experience if that particular content were changed, then we are just bound to suffer. And there's nothing in that. I hope nobody hears that as, the first woman, so just stay in that miserable job that you hate, because leaving it, I'm not saying that at all. I am saying do whatever it is that you want to do and pay really, really close attention.
Yes. Yes.
Because that's what's going to free us. Hearing how conditioning keeps us in our own personal little hell. And it behooves each one of us to pay close attention to our own circumstances, because what conditioning does to you, the process is the same as what it does to me. But the content is enough different that each one of us is required to free ourselves individually from the grip that it has on us.
Yes. Yes. And as you said, it's the looking that matters, not the doing.
Yes.
Whatever he ends up choosing to do.
Yes. Yes. And underlining again, it is not, because so many people say to me, well, I understand that if I were really doing spiritual practice, I could be happy anywhere. So why not stay in this place that I hate? And why? if what we're doing is learning to wake up and pay attention and extend loving compassion to whatever circumstances, why not pick the one that you think you'll be happiest in? And if you're not happy in that, and you think that there, you know, conditioning is saying, oh, well, but if you would do this, well, then do that, do that, do that, do that, whatever it takes, until finally we get it that, no, it's just going to drag me around through life. So I might as well just stick with this, because if I leave, I know it's good. That comes from a very different place than, well, I should just stay here because I know it's just conditioning. Getting to that place of saying, no, I have changed circumstances so many times, and I always afterwards wind up in exactly the same place. It's just cheaper and easier to stay here. No, buying another new house is not going to make me happy. I've bought so many of them, and I always thought I was going to be happy. And then I got in it, and all that happens is conditioning starts in on everything that's wrong with it. So this is as good a house as any. I'm just going to stay here.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Then you don't have to pack everything up, too.
Exactly. After a while, it's like, hey, I'm still going to be me.
Yes.
New job, new relationship, new house, new place, new whatever it is. I'm going to still be me dealing with my karmic conditioning. And so I might as well just do it here.
Yes.
And if that seems to be the case, and it's not coming from a place of should, a big contest that conditioning is going to make, then, yeah, it really is cheaper and easier just to take yourself wherever you are and be there with you and free yourself from conditioning in those circumstances.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Exciting. You're listening
to it. Really is. It really is. It's just that little switch that we make, and instead of life becoming grim, this grim contest that we're going to lose, it does become exciting. Yeah, it becomes like a game. Okay, so there's conditioning. It's going to try to get me about anything. You know, the voices are going to come in and say, "I did it wrong. I'm going to do it wrong. It's not going to work. Something awful." Okay, we know that. That's a given. As long as that's happening, then that's a given. So how can I continue to bring loving kindness? How can I continue to expand conscious awareness and compassion to embrace the person who is being the recipient of all of this?
Mm-hmm.
How can I continue under these circumstances? That's, so we're doing that as individuals, and as far as I can tell, that is the first piece work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Inner peace.
Inner peace, yeah. We're practicing. How do I continue opening my heart? How do I continue to accept this? how do I continue to recognize the conditioning for what it is and choose loving kindness over ideas about how things should be, or I have to be, or what is required for a person to have the right sort of, how do I continue to open my heart, make that choice over all of this content inside? And then it's just such a logical next step to include everything else in that.
Yes. Yes.
Because the process is the same. Opening my heart to myself and all of my conditioned beliefs about should and should not and right and wrong and good and bad and punishment and reward, opening my heart to all of that and bringing loving kindness and compassion to the person who's trapped in the middle of that, then doing that process with you is exactly the same. It's just a slightly different content.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do it with them. And then we do it with all of them. And it's just practicing the same process in different circumstances.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it seems like until I can get clear about what's going on here, that I'm not really available out there.
No. No. In fact, the thing that Bobby was pointing at, that very helpful exercise he did,
we can
really, if the circumstances, if the content is big enough and real enough, it's easy for conditioning to pull us into a belief that, but this is really important. It is about them. They really do need to be different. I really do need to make them see how wrong they are so that we get pulled into that if we get pulled into it with ourselves.
Yes.
You know, these circumstances are really big. I need to listen to these voices that are being hard on me because these circumstances are, this is money. You know, this is health. This is the kids. This is some sort of very large life content to which we cannot bring loving kindness and compassion. We have to fall back on conditioning's notions of right and wrong and the thing that has to happen and who needs to be punished, and because the stakes are really high. You know, it's hard for us to trust the kindness and wisdom of the heart when things are very threatening.
Yes.
And of course, in my world, that's the time that we need to trust them the very most.
Yes. Yes.
Wonderful. We know these things. It's practicing them that's so very, very challenging, which, of course, is the good part of us getting together like this, because then we get to remind ourselves and one another of who we really are and what our great opportunity is as human beings.
Yes, every week.
Every week we get together.
Every week.
Yeah. And when we're lucky, we get to do it every day. And we do. We can, because every moment of our lives is a moment either to watch our hearts open or our hearts close.
Yes.
To encourage our hearts to open or allow our hearts to close.
Yes.
We can bring conscious awareness and an element of choice to every moment of our lives. Every pair of other eyes that we look into, that's an opportunity to remind ourselves that loving kindness can be the bottom line of every relationship. And even if those eyes we're looking into are the eyes in the mirror in the morning, to remind ourselves that this is a person who would benefit greatly from a moment of loving kindness and understanding and compassion.
Yes. Sherry, we're at the end.
I practiced it a lot with the cats in Assisi. I swear there are more cats in this town than anywhere I've ever been. And they're great. They have great eyes of compassion to look into as you walk around through the day. So it's available for us everywhere all the time.
Great.
Yeah.
Sherry, we're at the end of our hour here. I think the hours get shorter when we get on there.
They do. It must be this time around the world thing. I don't know. We've got to look into the technology of that, Michael.
Yes, time warp or something like that.
Time warp, exactly.
You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Please join us again next week. Sherry's going to be with us again live from Italy. That's Tuesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Sherry has a lot of willingness to get up in the middle of the night. I'd like to thank all of our listeners today, our callers today. I'd like to thank Jay and Michael for their continued stalwart performance here. And if people have email questions, please feel free to drop us a line. And our email address is openair@kzsu.org. Archives of all of these wonderful shows are available at Sherry's website, which is sherryhuber.com, spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R.com. Thank you, Sherry, and we'll talk to you next week.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.